Well, good morning again to everyone. The Sunday SIT team meets the last Friday of every month to plan how we're going to deal with the next month's topic. And we volunteer who's going to do what. And I just jumped in immediately to say I wanted to give the first talk because I'm excited to be sharing with you. And you might be surprised by the use of my word excited around the topic death and dying. But it's true because it's not only do I not find this topic morbid. I'm going to just shift this view so that I can see everybody here. I'm looking just at myself instead of the rest of you. Not only do I not find this topic morbid or off-putting, I really find it as an excellent doorway into being with life as it really is, in all of its elements of joy and sorrow, insight and mystery. It's really my go-to heart practice. I probably work with these topics more than I do with the Brahma Viharas. And I was introduced to this topic, to the Dharma, through death and dying. And my practice has deepened over the years with my volunteer work with the dying. It's a topic of the heart, imagining our own death, the death of our loved ones, being with someone who's dying. The heart can't help but stay open. Throughout this month, the other members of the Sunday team will be sharing teachings of the Buddha that relate how fear of death and dying is so big, how the culture supports our avoiding it, how relating to death and dying connects with our understanding of the three characteristics and becoming and not self, and insights about grief and loss. Usually on the last Sunday of every month, we do a recap and then focus on practices. But this month, each of the talks is going to include some suggestions for how to practice. This morning, I want to invite you to explore with me three ways of examining the topic: our own death, the death of our loved ones, and issues of dying. Dying of the physical body, dying of the many identities and attachments we have, and the slow dying of and diminishment of our abilities as we age. After I wrote down some of my initial thoughts, I realized that this talk is really a pep talk about practice. Here's what Frank Ostaszewski says. Frank Ostaszewski is the co-founder of the Zen Hospice Project and the author of a book called The Five Invitations, Discovering What Death Can Teach Us About Living Fully. He came to Sims a few years ago, gave a fabulous talk, and he says, to imagine at the time of your dying that you will have the physical ability, the emotional stability, the mental clarity to do the work of a lifetime is an absurd gamble. The time to practice is now. I would add that to imagine at the time of death of someone close to you that you will have the clarity, the emotional stability, etc., is also an absurd gamble. So the time to practice is now. Dealing with these issues in our practice is really a way of preparing for our own death. It's a preparation for being with the deaths of those we care about. And it's the preparation for being with the small deaths we experience along the way. Seeing our practice as preparation not only for big endings, but also for whatever happens in the next moment, like Tiwari was talking about with the endings. Because we know from all of the teachings and from our practice, whatever we cultivate and focus on in one moment tills the soil, plants the seed for the next. So an important caveat, though, practicing with issues of death and dying will not help you avoid the pain of loss, grief, and death. Remember the Buddhist teachings about the difference between pain and suffering. The pain of loss will still be there. but you'll develop a different relationship with loss, grief, and death. These practices offer us an opportunity to not add that second arrow of suffering to the pain associated with death and dying. Many of us, maybe most of us, came to the Dharma because there was something not quite right in our lives. We were in some kind of pain, mental, emotional, perhaps physical. We were experiencing that sense of dissatisfaction that is addressed in the First Noble Truth. For me, I went to my first meditation retreat, a 10-day meditation retreat with Stephen Levine on the topic of death and dying. It was 3 weeks after my sister Nancy had died. Nancy, 6 years older than me, was my best friend, my never-faltering advocate and mentor, and the person with whom I have laughed harder and longer than anyone else in my life. I was in a lot of pain. I didn't know anything about Buddhism or the practice, but I remember sitting there in the big meditation hall at Brighton Bush Hot Springs and having this sense and thought, I have come home. I so resonated with everything Stephen talked about. I resonated with the practice, even though it was and sometimes still is really challenging. I've been a kind of spiritual seeker since I was a kid. And I felt then, back in 1983, that this spiritual path had my name on it. In the first 3 years after the retreat, two friends and I became immersed in this issue. We founded something called Shanti Seattle. It was an organization that provided emotional support to people who were dying. It was at the height of the AIDS crisis, and we met with many, mostly young men who were facing death. When I left Shanti, my practice got a little bit spotty for a while, but then the gift of a health crisis brought me back and I've never left. So let's first look at our own deaths. Sims has a wonderful death and dying project that started 10 or 12 years ago. And in that group, there's maybe 30 or 40 of us who regularly attend a few times a year. We've done intentional practices that help us explore our views and emotions about our own death. Here are a couple of the learning objectives, which really are what we're about this whole month. Enhance awareness and diminish denial of death and dying. See how we're conditioned to deny death. Get more comfortable with death in our own lives and have less fear and more presence. Learn how to be with people who are dying, being present, compassionate, and useful. And see death and dying as a Dharma practice, awakening to ultimate reality. So I have some suggested practices, and these actually are ones that we've done in the Death and Dying Project. And all of them are suggested as kind of catalysts for your own exploration. Pick one or do them all. You can do this alone, just journaling, but it's really better if you have a good friend or a partner to do this with. Each taking a few minutes with the other person providing just deep listening and acting as a witness. Answer some of these questions. What's your hope for your own death? Who do you want to be there? Who do you not want to be there? What kind of environment do you hope for? Music, quiet, maybe a whole group of folks? What are some of your fears as you think about your own death? Pain, the loss of awareness? What's going on there? Do you have a view about what is a good death? If so, explore that and talk about it. Take notes, revisit these. These kinds of questions are really helpful. Another might be to reflect on this statement. Death is both miraculous and ordinary. What comes up as you consider this? Work on your own will, write up your advanced directives, or do what might be the hardest thing of all, which is to have conversations with your loved one about your own death. See what comes up there. and practice with all that has arisen. This is really rich soil. The second area is practicing with the getting prepared for the death of others. Perhaps many of you have not had very many experiences with death thus far in your life. And however, at some point, death is going to visit. Preparing for those losses can be a wonderful heart practice. And I'd like to share a few of my own experiences being with the dying and what I've learned from them. The first was in the 80s, during the first years of Shanti, and I was paired with a young man who was dying with AIDS. What I remember about that encounter, because we only met once, was how his rage and frustration had filled the entire space. I was so naive back then and ignorant on how best to be with the dying. All I remember doing is sitting there in that space, feeling his anger, feeling his frustration and fear. It all seemed so unfair, and I think all of us who were around during those years would agree that a virus that targeted young people brought up so many feelings and thoughts, and I realized I had this belief that death was okay if it happens when you're old. A second experience I want to share was through the SIMS Death and Dying Project. I was part of a small support sangha for a man in his early 50s who was dying of cancer, and I had never met him before. When I first sat with him, I asked him what were his thoughts about inviting four or five people, kind of strangers, to come in and sit with and witness his dying process. He looked at me and he said he didn't know, but he thought he'd just open that door and walk through it. For a year, his support sangha kept on walking through those doors with him. A couple months before he died, he fell in love. And I watched with amazement that during dying, there was so much love for living. A third experience was with a man also dying of cancer. He was already living in an end-of-life hospice. Such a beautiful human being, so talented, a musician, so smart, and oh, so attached to the identities he had developed during his life. He struggled so as the realizations kept on coming to him that he could no longer do the work that had given his life so much meaning and satisfaction. And the fourth experience was being part of an end-of-life care committee with a really dear friend. Learning there are so many decisions to make if you are given the gift of a prognosis and that you don't just die suddenly. It's a kind of way, maybe a weird way of using the word gift, but not everyone is allowed to go through that process and say their goodbyes. There's so many decisions to be made about dying. Treatment plans, then the regimens to deal with the effects of the treatment plans, and the insurance companies and the doctors, and the recommendations from everybody about new approaches, and the concern for the people who are left behind. What I gained from these experiences, most importantly, was that each one reminded me that I was exactly the same as all these people. It is this universal process, the anger, the attachments, and also the freedom to open up to the experience and do like what the Frank Sinatra song says, see what happens. All of these are universal experiences. I saw my own anger. I saw how I also cling to this, who am I? And that it's based on what I've done. My whole understanding of love changed. I fell in love with every person that I sat with. I was humbled and honored to be included and experienced their generosity. When you really open up to this issue and you share it with friends, I don't only mean sharing your actual dying process with friends, but sharing your your heart space about as you just contemplated. So then being with death and dying and all the losses along the way. So in a way, my experiences sitting with the dying have affected how I relate to the smaller deaths in my life. Many of you have already been or are currently hospice volunteers, or maybe you've participated in Harborview's program called Death, No One Dies Alone, which brings in volunteers to sit with people who have no family or community. But short of that, you don't have to become a hospice volunteer to become more comfortable with practicing the small deaths that happen all the time. Like Tiweri was saying in our meditation of just practicing with the passing of each breath. And we notice that as we practice with the beginnings and endings, if we're really open to it, we can also sense that well of gratitude, not only for the gift we received, but to really feel the bittersweet moments when they're gone. I'm a woman in my 70s, so I'm having a lot of opportunities to observe and accept the changes of in body and mind. I was a sea kayaker for 25 years, big trips. I don't sleep on the ground anymore. When I ran the recycling company, I used to drive big trucks and move heavy equipment. I don't do that anymore. In my yoga practice, my knees do not like warrior poses. And all those identities of being a recycler and a truck driver and a kayaker and a yoga person, well, who was that Suze? And where did she go? So, you know, the opportunities for really looking at our selfing moments. If you're inclined towards chanting, the impermanence chant is a wonderful way of bringing yourself back to this issue. I sometimes do it in Pali, but in English, it's all things are impermanent. They arise and they pass away. To be at peace with this truth brings great happiness. Just feeling how that lands on you can be a great practice. Some of my friends who are younger than I am have said, I've got trouble with all this aging stuff. So, and I think all of us do at moments. The five recollections are another wonderful practice. For those of you who aren't familiar, I will share them. I am of the nature to grow old. There is no way to escape growing old. I am of the nature to have ill health. There is no way to escape ill health. I am of the nature to die. There is no way to escape death. All that is dear to me and everyone I love are of the nature to change. There is no way to escape being separated from them. My actions are my only true belongings. I cannot escape the consequences of my actions. My actions are the ground on which I stand. Another thing to think about is remembering where you currently find refuge and insight. Are the paramis part of your practice, especially the paramis of renunciation and resolve, kindness, patience? Seeking out spiritual friends in the Sangha to talk about these issues. And remember that practicing with death and dying is really practicing with life. One of the wonderful Zen teachers, Norman Fisher, who visits Seattle and Sims yearly, says that life is the field of practice. Life in all of its beginnings and endings. At the Death and Dying Project, whenever we come together, we always end with the Zen night chant. So I'm going to say it, and then you can say it out loud to yourself. I'll pause after each line. May I respectfully remind you,
May I respectfully remind you?
Life and death are of supreme importance.
Life and death are of supreme importance.
Time passes swiftly and opportunities are lost.
Time passes swiftly and opportunities are lost.
Let us awaken, awaken.
Let us awaken, awaken.
Do not squander your life.
Do not squander your life.
Thank you for your kind attention, for indulging me in my enthusiasm about this topic. And may that maybe filter over towards you. We're going to now have some time to be in breakout groups. And the question really is, what's up for you as you start thinking about this topic? And remember, in these groups, we don't give advice. We try not to compare. We practice deep listening. And we treat what everyone says with confidentiality. So and you're also welcome to be in a group and then pass and not say anything. You could just be there and participate as a witness and as a deep listener. Anybody want to share any kind of reflections from your group? Any questions? And I did put into the chat the five are called the five recollections. And if you go to Access to Insight, you could get several versions of it. Or if you just Google it, Buddhist five recollections, you can get that pretty easily. So anyone think you're able to unmute? Yeah, Jean, please. And then Leslie after.
Thanks. First of all, we all loved your talk, Suze. It was really great. So I wanted to share something that was not from our discussion, but I'm going to put this in the chat. Michael Hebb, who was the person who started Let's Talk About Death over dinner, Death with Dinner conversations, he's giving a free talk this Thursday. It's a few organizations on Vashon are sponsoring it, but anybody can get on. So I'm going to put the registration link in the chat.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jean. Leslie, did you want to share something?
Oh, just briefly, in both of the groups I was in.
Aren't you lucky? See, I gave you two groups.
We noticed how quickly we got attached to our first group and end up in the same group. Well, I was really impressed with how readily everybody was very honest in depth in their sharing, and that just even in these small little groups, what a wide variety of feelings there are about death and dying. You know, it's very personal, and everybody has their very personal take on how they feel about it and what their experience is with it. So, yeah, that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you. And I think it's both what you just said and that my experience is kind of the universality of the responses to death and dying. At any moment, we'd have our own particular view or emotion that's up. Thank you, Leslie. Anyone else? Any kind of... David, I see that little hand. Did you mean to put a hand up, David? No? Okay. But you can speak if you want to. Where'd you go? You got moved around. Okay.
Yeah, no, I didn't know.
That's okay.
So great to be here, and I loved your talk, Suze.
Thanks, David. Nice to see you.
it's nice to be in the Sunday morning thing, and I'm glad you guys are taking on this topic for the month. I'm really, really looking forward to it. Thanks so much.
Good. Thanks. There was another quote from Stephen Levine. If you've never read any of his books, they're just fabulous. Especially my favorite is the one called Who Dies? And to die in wholeness, you have to live in wholeness. It's part of my pep talk for practicing. Sean and Bruce, I see that yellow hand. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning. We live in a continuing care retirement community, and there's probably about 240, 250 of us that live here. We never talk about this subject. It's like taboo. I wouldn't feel comfortable talking to pretty much anybody here except maybe one person I know. So I really appreciate being able to talk about this.
Thank you. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, that's like, oh, we're all here to die, but no, we're not going to talk about it.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, we're here. Every one of us is here to die. That's why we came here, which is pretty cool. You'd think we'd be talking about it, but we're not.
I'd be interested to see whether once the pandemic's over and you can have more one-on-one conversation, whether there is maybe more openness. It would be interesting to see. You don't think?
No, they're all off running around getting ready to travel and going on cruises and like drinking more wine. It's just,
okay, yeah. So, Carol, you had your hand up.
Right. Nice well, in response to Bruce, I had my mother who did die. She once said, if I die, and I said, Mom, I think it's going to be when you die. But the two groups, the first group, and it was great, both groups, but we talked about history, losing history. And I think there's two ways of looking at this. Am I going to die? And what happens when other things die, other people and whatever? And I realize my focus is really on what happens when other people die, and I'm just beginning to think I'm going to die. And I haven't really dealt with that, but the history, losing the history, my history with that person important and not being able to go back and ground against that. That is one of the things. But the other thing is the ceremony, and how to make that transition and how to go through that process. And I gave the example of my dog who died while I was away, and the vet put, the dog in the freezer. And, when I came back, a friend and I went and got the dog and put her on the pillow that she used to be at. And then I sat there for 2 or 3 hours and petted her, frozen, but she was very lifelike, and just all the memories I had, and I cried and I transitioned. And so having the ceremonies to go through to make that transition from being alive to dead are really important. And I think that that's part of maybe our culture, maybe not having that. And I made that up. But to allow for that and to have ideas about that, I think is important. How to make that transition from when they're alive to dead.
Yeah. Thank you, Carol. I'll share that when Bill died, he died on the street. He was on a run and just died instantly, and I wasn't able to see him. He was taken to the King County, wherever. So when I finally found him, got to see him, he also was frozen. And we were able to bury him at sea. And so he was perfectly shrouded. The funeral home did this beautiful job in creating this kind of like off-white silk looking shroud, and we all drew and wrote comments on his body before we threw him into the ocean 12 miles out. And that whole trip was like you're saying, Carol, it was a ceremony, included three gray whales that followed us out for quite a while. So on the 31st of this month, Tuareg will be doing a remembrance ceremony at Sims on Monday night. So think about joining then. Leslie, did you want to say something else? Your hand was up, or was that a mistake?
Oh, no, it's never a mistake. I've always got something to say.
Well, can we wait and let someone else who hasn't spoken yet?
Yes.
Lauren,
yes.
Go for it.
Oh, am I supposed to talk now?
Oh, I didn't. I had said Lauren.
Oh, okay. Okay, Lauren, go ahead. Yes.
You can be right after Lauren.
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, I just want to say that we talked about resolution and transition and the desire to have that. So it goes along with what you have said and Leslie said, or Carol said, and that is seems to be a desire. And sometimes you're confronted with the lack of that. And then what do you do in that situation? So I thought that was interesting that came up. But the thing I wanted to add was that my mother started reading Elizabeth Kubler-Ross when she was getting older. And I remember one thing she told me was that Elizabeth, that struck her, and then it struck me, and I've been thinking about it. She said Elizabeth Kubler-Ross felt that if we are dying and we have time, we will probably the thing we're most attached to, we will start seeing that fade away, some skill, something we were identified with. And she, I believe, lost her sight. And so she talked about how hard it was for her to lose her sight because that was a really strong thing she was identified with. But it was also a very teaching. She learned a lot from that. So my mother was talking about that and was looking for at that time what it was that she was going to lose. And what she lost was her mobility. She always prided herself with a wonderful hiker, and she was hiking into her 80s. But she just lost balance and she kept falling, and she saw that go away. But she felt it was also something that she was meant to learn from. And so I've been looking for myself. I've been thinking about that. So I just thought it was something to contemplate.
Thanks for that sharing, Lauren. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yun-Yang?
Oh, yes. In one of the two groups that I joined, we did talk about the cultural difference of not speaking of death easily. And I shared my experience as someone who grew up as a Buddhist in South Korea. And I've been in the States for about over 20 years. But when I came here, that was a little shocking to me that death was such a no-no subject matter at all. And I shared my own experience of my father who died when I was a teen. And Suze, when you were talking about small death, what I witnessed was not just a physical decline. It's the death of someone's pride and someone's dignity, someone's identity around a lot of many things that slowly dies. That's the process I watched. And I had to use a lot of Buddhist learning to cope with it as a teen. What I'm hoping, and I feel like it's a gift that my father gave to me and my Buddhist learning, that I'm not tiptoeing around this issue around my children. Mm-hmm. So by doing so, and also being in practice and showing that it's something to contemplate on, and you can practice so that you can face it with a certain level of skill, is I'm really hoping that I can leave that to my children. Hopefully that's my hope.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing both of those and the your insight about the different cultures and different parts of the world and how we deal with this issue. And also the gift that we can give to others. That was one of the things of sitting with the dying, just the generosity of their willingness to be open and to let us witness what was going on. And what you're talking about with your children, I think is another gift to be, you know, just say, it may be scary, but we can do it anyway. Yeah. So Leslie, one real quick thing just to close, and then I'm going to turn it back over to Tiwary.
Just to confirm what she just said, as I was able to help both my mom and my dad in their dying, and they very strongly registered as this is like their final gift to me, is to teach me how, what dying is about. It was important and deep, especially since, you know, when we were an agrarian culture, people had, you know, birth and death going on around them all the time on the farms. It was a readily available part of life was the whole passing away of things. And it's only been within my lifetime that our culture has changed so that people are not living in those kinds of agrarian situations where death and dying is a more common experience. Being able to experience some deaths, I have found, is very, very helpful. It removes that mystery aspect and makes it just very tangible and something that could actually deal with. So
thank you for saying that. So my intention this morning was to be encouraging to this whole month. And I, from what I've heard back, it seems like people are open to it. And I look forward to sharing the rest of the month as the different members of the Sunday team share their insights. So Tiwary, some announcements and closing, and thanks everybody for your participation.
Yes. So first announcement is I want to tell you some things that are coming up. So, you know, Seattle Insight, those of you that are used to coming, I'm just going to share also for the people that are new here. We have several online classes or online sits so that you can look at our website at seattleinsight.org. There are weekly sits that happen on Monday evenings and during the day in the mornings and Thursday night and just a myriad of sits that happen that it can adjust to your schedule. If you're looking for a sangha to sit with regularly, there are several different opportunities, and they're all quite different. So there's even an under 40 sit that meets. So it's not, you don't have to find this sit. There's just a wide variety of sits that can meet your needs. We have a Buddhist essential class at Sue's and Lauren. They, I don't think anyone else.
And Arvry,
Lindo, and Susan. And I'm not sure, Arv, if you're a part of that group, but the local Dharma leaders, they teach various aspects of Buddhism. That's like more getting to know the practice as a whole rather than just the meditation. And there, it looks like I saw there was two classes coming up, one on the 10th of May and one on the 19th. They're on Wednesday evenings. Or is it just the 19th?
Just the 19th. Barry and Lauren are doing the eightfold.
Yes. Class. Yes. Then just the 19th on the, I think the 10th is my sit, so ignore that. That's my Monday night. That's what that is. So the next Buddhist essential class that goes through the whole year of different aspects of practice is on the 19th. Tim will have a day of mindfulness. If you don't get an opportunity to practice extended practice, so not just a simple sit here and there, then a day of mindfulness might be a great opportunity. It's online. Just the whole day. It's very nice. You just spend the day in practice. It's always at the end of a beginning class, and the next one will be on the 15th of May. And then Narayan, which is a teacher from Cambridge, is coming for a weekend non-residential. It's a Friday night, a Saturday and a Sunday. And I try my best to encourage people to do a retreat at home. It's not what you think. You think it feels like, oh, that would be so not working, but it's not really like that. When you do a retreat at home, somehow it brings your practice into your everyday life. And so Narayan will be here. I think she'll be here on the 14th, 15th, and 16th. Is it that week, the weekend after?
It's the 22nd.
23rd. Yeah.
And I don't believe it's Friday night. I think it's Saturday and Sunday.
The 22nd. Right. Oh. Okay, great. Thank you, Carol. Thank you, Suze. 22nd and the 23rd. That's Saturday and Sunday.
And you do have to pre-register in order to get the link, but it's easy.
Yeah, you do have to pre-register. So if you haven't tried a day of practice at home, pretty soon we'll be out of this pandemic and nobody's going to want to sit at home and do a practice. So do it while, you know, it's like right here in front of us so you can see what it's like to practice at home in an extended way. So I think that's it. Oh, Donna, please remember Donna for Suze, the teachers and Sims. This is the only way this practice continues is if we all in our own ways at whatever means we have, support its continuation. And that's how it continues. And so whatever you could offer for Suze and her freely offered talk and, Sims, it would be greatly appreciated.
Could I make a quick announcement?
Yes, I'm sorry. Thank you, Arv.
No problem. I know we're over time, so I'll make it brief. This sit used to be a sit that met in person, and we had children involved. In fact, one of the explicit intentions of this sit was a way to involve our children in meditation practice and the Dhamma. Of course, since we've moved online, and we may continue to be online, you know, that's kind of diminished. My own son, 10, you know, he doesn't really do that anymore. So I would like to hear your ideas about how to incorporate children. So if you have children and ideas about them joining the Sangha, or really more broadly to think about how Sims can really accommodate them, I would love to hear your ideas, and I'd love to start a discussion about that. You can email me. I just sent to the chat my personal email address. If you email me there, I'll make sure that you're part of this discussion, and I would love to hear from you. Yes.
And if you know anyone who has children and would like to know how they could incorporate the practice with their kids, give them that email address and so we can have a broader discussion about it. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. So let's just settle back down and maybe, close our eyes just so we can turn inward. Just like to acknowledge that whatever positive or beneficial energies that arise from our practice, that rather than keep it for ourselves, we'd like to send that energy out into the world so that it can help support the ending of suffering for all beings. May all beings be free of inner and outer harm, danger. May all beings be peaceful and happy, and may all beings live with joy.
Everybody.
All right. Thank you so much. I'll unmute everybody and you can free to say goodbye. Thank you so much for being here.